Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
USDA raises the soybean carryout by 100 million bushels and fines an extra 800,000 acres. We'll discuss the latest USDA reports today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Joe Persaki, the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. Our panelists today are Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, Tom Mann with Strategic Farm Marketing from here in Champaign, and Tim Young of Ag Target Incorporated out of Vincennes, Indiana. Let's open today's discussion with this question up front. Let's forget about that 70 million bushel change in the soybean exports. I want to know about acreage. Did the winter wheat seedings number give us any indication of what is to come this spring for the corn and soybean acreage? We'll start with you, Dale Durkles.
You know, I think the trade is going to take a look at the increase in soft red wheat acreage, which is basically mostly within the corn belt here, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and into Ohio. And take that as some kind of a subtle hint that maybe producers are looking at high input costs and high input costs like corn and trying to shift some of that down into a lower input cost item. And wheat's a natural because that's something also that gives them a cash flow generator this summer. And that's especially important in Illinois and allied areas because with the smaller crops in some places, cash flow in the summer could be a nice little benefit.
Dale Durkles with AgriVisor Services. Tom Mann with Strategic Farm Marketing.
Well, on top of the increase in wheat acres, I think it also gives them a double crop opportunity whereby they can go ahead and take those wheat acres that have been harvested, and obviously if conditions are right, they can plant beans and add value to that ground.
And Tim Young joining us from his office in Vincennes, Indiana. Your answer to the question?
I think the wheat acre increase was obvious early, especially in my area. We discussed a month ago, I looked at least 15% increase. I think we also have to note that the increase in wheat acres gives the farmer a lot of flexibility, as Dale mentioned. They can get some cash flow, but they can also adjust to what the market does between now and then. Increase in double crop soybeans follows the wheat, and I've heard a lot of concern from bankers about the financial situation of a lot of farmers in the area that I service. So I think cash flow is a problem.
As you look at the breakdown of the wheat by class, by the way, the hard red winter wheat lower this year than it was last year in total acreage, but acreage for hard red winter wheat is higher in Kansas and Texas. That may be important in the long run for corn acres, I suppose. And the soft red winter wheat was up by about a third across the entire U.S., Illinois, Missouri, Indiana, Ohio, and Iowa, all up. Iowa up 125%, Illinois at about a third higher, so I think they were up 37% or 137% of last year's crop. March wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade settled on a high of 335, a low of 323 and three quarters. Their settlement price up 4 cents from last week at 334 and three quarters. July wheat at 353 and three quarters, up 3 1/4 from last week. Soy complex now, bean futures, January futures, 598 and a quarter on the high, the low at 561 this week. The Jan beans settled at 565. They were down 35 and a half cents from last week. November beans at 605 and a quarter were off 28 and a half. The bean market, USDA raised carryout to 505 million bushels. This, I believe, is a record level and up 100 million from December. For the third report in a row, exports have been lowered. They're down 70 million bushels. Now, despite this, Friday, the beans managed to finish the day higher. The question, and it's the same one we've been asking since the bean rally started earlier this winter, why should the price of soybeans at the Board of Trade be better than 550 or 560? Tom Mann.
Well, basically, a lot of this is a fund-generated thing. As everybody knows, it was probably 3 weeks ago or better, the rumor surfaced that the funds had X amount of dollars to spend, a huge amount of dollars, And as of sometime early this week, they had only spent 25% of that money. But as anybody knows, index funds are always going long. So I think that's propped this market up in the bean complex based on local or U.S. numbers and world numbers. There's just too big a supply for where the price is at today.
Daryl Good's been telling me it's been overpriced better than a month. He told the folks at the Corn and Soybean Classic Series that I was hosting this week in Bloomington on Tuesday that he thought corn and beans were overpriced on that day. That didn't make the farmers happy. Do you think that the price of beans has been too high?
You know, when you look at the fundamental structure, you'd have to say, you know, with a 505 million carryout, especially now where we're already, you know, well into this marketing year and we can see the pace of consumption relatively well, you'd have to say, yeah, but we always have to remember in the world of commodities, we basically are looking at something that it's an emotional thing, too. It's a psychological ingredient. What is value? And I think a lot of people are looking in the index funds, especially, you know, they're looking at relative values. You know, when you're looking at crude oil over 60, when you're looking at gold up at 25-year highs this week, you're looking at silver prices high, you're looking at a lot of base industrial metals high. And I think a lot of people are looking at the grain markets and going, you know, long-term bang for the buck. And that's the way they look at a market, is that they're looking at a long-term investment strategy. There's probably better opportunity to make money in grains than there is in some of these other areas.
You think we'll see the funds into this market again shortly?
Well, I think you have to differentiate here when you talk about funds. You have the big spec funds. They buy and they sell both. You know,
index
funds. These index funds, I think, you know, they're probably going to be looking at this market pretty closely here now in this post-report period and seeing how the market performs, how it reacts. And they're going to be looking for opportunities to start their investment program. It's always hard to tell, you know, how aggressive do they come after it? And I don't have an easy answer for that, and nobody does.
Tim, USDA increased the total U.S. soybean production to 3.086 billion bushels. That's, by the way, is the second largest crop on record, just behind last year. The national average yield raised from 42.7 to 43.3 bushels to the acre. The harvested area was down 4%. Tell me, Tim, about that 70 million lost in exports and what it means to be below a billion bushels in total exports, down to 950 million.
Well, personally, I don't like to break down a lot of fundamental numbers, but when I look at the bean market, the number that concerns me most is the global situation. When we're looking at over an 18% increase in year-over-year stocks projected by the USDA, and going above last year's record of 44.9 million metric tons, and now they're projecting at 53.17 million metric tons on the report yesterday, that has to be concerning if you dial in any fundamental analysis into your price projections. And I would have to agree with the guys. Based on those situations, beans are overpriced.
Well, go ahead.
You know, one thing that a lot of people need to be aware of, though, when you step back a minute and you look at soybeans or oilseeds, and instead of looking at them purely as a stocks number, look at them as a stocks as a percent of consumption. The numbers that we're seeing here now might seem larger than we've ever had here in recent memory. But when you look at them as a percent of the amount of oil seeds or soybeans we're consuming in the world, we're really not all that large, and it's something that can be trimmed away relatively quickly with some minor shifts in terms of demand or, you know, when you get into the summer in terms of production. So, you know, we aren't working with a burdensome thing on soybeans, even at 53 million ton, like what we had in the grains back in the mid-80s. You know, so we don't have those kinds of environment when you look at them as a stocks as a percent of use.
What do you think that ratio should be, and what is it?
I don't remember the world numbers right off my head right now, so I really can't cite you what the ratio is. We're somewhere under 20%, as I think it is. You know, to give people a perspective, when you look at stocks use ratio into grains back in the mid-1980s, when we were really burdened with supplies, we were up over 30% in things like corn and wheat. You know, and we've really never been above the levels we're at right now in terms of oil seeds around the world.
And I would agree with Dale from that standpoint. With those in the marketplace that have inflation fears and are looking for cheap products, we've already seen the energies and the metals and some of the other softs already explode to high prices. And if we have those inflationary fears, and then we encompass maybe a problem in South America or United States, we could lose bearishness real quick in any commodity that we're talking about.
Okay, I'm a little confused now. Are we bearish or are friendly the bean market, and or is it just the optimism that generally happens to be in the old farm boy that I'm hearing about?
All I'm really saying is, I don't see anything to be bullish about, but don't get extremely bearish. You know, based when you look at the numbers, you really have to look at them in a bigger picture and really understand where they're at. There isn't anything in these numbers you can get bullish about. I would admit that quickly. But you have to be careful, because when you look at them as a stocks as a percent of use on a worldwide basis, we aren't what I'm going to call incredibly large like the grains were back in the mid-1980s when we really did have burdensome supply. So all I'm just saying is don't get real bearish. Temper your bearishness.
So you don't want to talk about $4 beans. You want to talk about $5.25 or is $5.70?
I don't have a number really picked out at this particular moment, to be honest, other than I think we could continue to go down. It wouldn't shock me maybe that we don't see soybean prices temporarily hit a new low, but I don't see much below that either if that would happen.
How about you, Tim?
I could see the market test, the support that we've left on the charts, on the weekly chart at 546, and I've thought all fall that we really needed to trade to 526 on the lead market just to flush out some of the fears in the marketplace.
Well, I guess what I'm looking at, and I haven't updated my charts from the other day with the increase in world supply, but I think we're looking at somewhere around 85 days of soybean ending stocks and days use. That's probably about an increase of 2 or 3 days. And to me, if you start plotting these numbers, I could see a four in front of soybeans. Maybe I'm being overly pessimistic, but I guess based on those numbers, I can see, you know, something between 475 and 490 not being unrealistic.
Let's call it undecided until we get a scare in the weather market from either South America or from the U.S. plantings yet to come this season. Corn market now. Futures in the March contract had a high of 214 and three quarters this week, a low of 209 and a half. The March corn settled at 213 and a half. They were down 0.75 cents from last week. December futures at 248 and three quarters were off a half. Corn for grain production from the USDA report is estimated now at 11.1 billion bushels. That's up a percentage point from the November forecast, but down 6% from the 11.8 billion bushels produced last year. The average U.S. grain yield is estimated at 147.9 bushels to the acre. That's down a half a bushel from November, the forecast, and down 12.5. Let me repeat that. Down 12.5 bushels from 2004. The 2005 production and yield estimates are the second largest on record behind last year. The area harvested for grain at 75.1 million acres. That's up 2% from last year. What irked you most? This is kind of a fun question, but what was it? What was the number that pained you most when you looked at the numbers from USDA on this one?
I'll use the word surprised. And that was really the harvested acreage number on corn. You know, we had somewhere in the vicinity, it was a little over 800,000 acres of increase. You know, and it's at this late of a date in the marketing year or in the report season especially, it's kind of surprising to see them come in with that big of an adjustment. We can go back, and I don't remember, it was the October report, I think it was. They made a fairly significant adjustment in the soybean plantings and harvested acreage at that point because they had FSA numbers to work with. And, you know, they didn't make any adjustment with corn. And all of a sudden, here we come all the way up into January, and oops, we got a change. And it's really unusual to find it this late a date. It didn't irk me, but it just surprised me that you find that today, because usually in January you find a yield shift.
I guess the biggest thing that surprised me on the number was the planted versus the harvested being one of the highest percentages, almost 92%. That's an astronomical number for the amount of problems that we've had throughout the U.S. this year, basically in Illinois and some other states. But that's a huge number as far as I'm concerned. I'm a little concerned over the percentage of harvested versus planted.
Tim, USDA estimates the average cash price for the 2005 harvested corn will range from $1.75 to $2.05. That is higher than the previous estimate, but it's based on cash prices already received by farmers as reported to NASS, that according to USDA. This, it says, suggests farmers forward contracted a substantial portion of the crop when prices were much higher. For example, last summer. Do you agree? Have farmers gotten to be better marketers?
I didn't really see it in my area. They might have sold a percentage, but not a large percentage. And I guess that price catches me by surprise, knowing that we've seen such historically wide basis at harvest time, which meant we had low prices, $1.50, $1.60 prices in a lot of areas. So that number kind of surprises me.
Are you satisfied with the numbers that USDA came out with for their final crop production figures?
Being a one-man office, I don't have time to judge their numbers. I read them, and I think they dictate the market, and I have to believe them because I don't have the resources available.
Turn that around. Are you happy with, not happy, but are you satisfied that the price of corn at the Chicago Board of Trade and your local cash market is correct?
Working with individual farmers, no, I'm never satisfied when we're talking about low prices like we are today, but I think they're just at the moment.
Yeah, you know, when you look at USDA numbers, and especially here in the January report, because you have the stocks as a check and balance back against your production number, and you have a lot of things that really come together here. It makes these sets of numbers really a pretty good base to work with. You know, you have to really understand that, you know, you may not like the numbers, but they're probably about as good as good a projection of where we are today that anybody can do. So you don't deny or you don't start saying, well, they're too high, too low, whatever the case may be. I think that leads you down a path of foolishness.
Did it change the marketing plans at Strategic Farm Marketing?
Well, basically, we're aggressive forward sellers, so we have a good portion of our book on already, but it has gotten pretty scary for those individuals that didn't take the advice, so I guess you'd say yeah.
And what do you do for them?
Well, at some point, we're probably going to re-own the corn. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at world corn ending stocks and days use, and this includes China with it, and to be honest with you, it's about the lowest since 1979, or second lowest since 1979. And so I'm sitting here saying that our corn prices are being supported by world numbers versus U.S. numbers. And we do have a glut in the U.S. What's going to happen? Our exports are going to have to pick up somewhere.
You know, when you really look at the balance of things and you know what Tom is talking about here, you know, we do not have an abundance of grain in the world. Whether you want to look at corn, coarse grains, you look at corn and wheat together, you throw rice in the mix, you know, we're threatening to start to get down as tight, frankly, as we were in the early 70s. I'm going back to 72, 73. We're not quite there yet. The changes we had in the world numbers on Friday probably brought the world trade at least a moderate amount of breathing room because they bumped the Chinese production and stocks by 4 million ton, which says, well, maybe they're going to be a little bit more aggressive subsidizing, trying to push stuff into the world. You don't know their official stocks policy, so you're never certain about that. But on balance, you know, it says don't get pessimistic this stuff because, boy, if you hook up production one place just a little bit, you know, things can get silly real quick, especially in the wheat and the corn.
March oats, a 190 and a quarter settlement price, by the way, they were down for the week. From the livestock and the mercantile exchange, February live cattle had a high this week at 96.90, a low at 93.85. February live cattle settled 47.5 cents lower at 95.57.5. The January feeder cattle 112.47.5. They were down 202.5. Lean hogs 64.85. The high, the low at 58.80. Lean hogs settled at $59. They were down $5.47.5. February bellies at 83.95 were off 365. Is she finally going to fall apart at the mercantile exchange?
Well, we got a potential problem building here. You know, when you look at hog futures, the thing you got to understand is even as where we closed Friday night, you're still roughly at about a 2 cent premium to where the actual cash index is. And so, and you got a cash market that's still falling. Cattle on itself probably can tend to hold together, but the cattle has got to be aware of what's going on with the hogs, and the hogs got to be aware of what's going on in the poultry industry because chicken breasts have just fallen apart and chicken exports have really starting to get hit hard. And I think we got a problem brewing here. And then you add in the fact that we've had the largest weight ever in the Iowa-Minnesota market of hogs marketed last week. They were 273.5 pounds. And, you know, if winter weather stays mild, that is a huge problem.
We have to say goodbye to Tim Young so that we can make room on the phone lines for Joe Persaki. We'll give Tim just an opportunity here to give us a final piece of advice before we let him go. And then we'll talk with the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. Joe Persaki will join us from Washington, D.C. after we hear the weather forecast. So, Tim, what's your final advice for us today?
Well, the crop report didn't change the marketing plan that I've issued to my clients. We are still unsold on corn. I still have a friendly bias on corn. We sold some new crop beans last week. And as Dale and I have talked on the show a few weeks ago, you know, there's some potential in the marketplace. And I think you have to be very open-minded and very flexible if you're a farm marketer. Volatility has increased. You have spec funds that can control the market quite quickly. And a lot of the numbers that we've talked about in the last few minutes on very optimistic production in several places in the world. So, and those things can change very, very quickly.
Tim, we appreciate you being with us today.
All right, thank you.
Tim Young joined us from his Vincennes, Indiana office, where he is with Ag Target Incorporated.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The cold and snow of December is a distant memory as unusually persistent mild January weather continues across Illinois and the central U.S. Temperatures this week averaged about 15 degrees above normal across the state, despite some cooler days here and there. A general west-to-east flow of air across the Midwest and the upper atmosphere is preventing cold air from making its way south into the states. Although there were a couple of days with daytime temperatures only in the 30s, not too far from normal, a persistent layer of low clouds early in the week kept overnight temperatures well above normal. As the middle of the month arrives, temperatures across the state average 12 to 15 degrees above where they should be this time of year. There was some precipitation early this week, heaviest across southern Illinois. Rainfall exceeded an inch to an inch and a half across far southern Illinois, tapering off to about a quarter of an inch in central Illinois and a tenth or less across the far north. After dealing with some precipitation early this weekend, there will be a brief cooling, and then the weather will start to warm again ahead of the next system. This next system will bring the possibility of more rain to Illinois beginning late Monday and continuing into perhaps early Wednesday. Although there will be a cooler day here and there, temperatures overall will continue to average above normal. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Click on AM and then on Agriculture.
I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today are Tom Mann of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Tim Young joined us early on from Ag Target Incorporated out of Vincennes, Indiana. And Dale Durkles is here in studio with us from AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Joe Persaki, chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS, joins us now from Washington, D.C. Joe, good to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here this afternoon.
So we've got to know, Joe, where did you find those extra corn acres, and why didn't you catch them earlier in the FSA figures?
Okay, well, the thing, we've got to remember, FSA, you know, back in October, we, being NASS, USDA NASS, we do make adjustments to planted acres based upon FSA data, okay? Now, we have just an idea of harvested acres based upon what farmers were telling us earlier in the season. Then in December, around the first part of December, we actually go back and re-interview farmers and re-ask them, their planted and harvested acres, and what that does is it gives us a better idea of that harvested to planted ratio. And what it looks like, we've got one of the highest harvested to planted ratios probably back since, I think it was 1994 we were looking at. So, you know, it seems like, you know, the fall was very good, you know, it's being so dry too, you know, and things ran through them. So more acres were harvested in relationship to planted.
What do you think the circumstances were to give you such a high ratio there between harvested acreage and planted acreage?
Well, the only thing I could think was that this fall was so dry, you know, relatively dry, compared to like last year was so wet, relatively wet in, you know, Illinois, Indiana, that sort of area, and farmers were able to, you know, actually get everything out of the field basically. That's what it looks like based on the data we got back from our survey.
I'm going to switch gears this time, man. I want to switch gears a little bit on you here about how the China number, how does that number get generated? Is that a CIA number? Do you guys have input in on that? Or just exactly where do those foreign numbers come from?
Okay, in within USDA, the National Agricultural Statistics Service, NAS, we take care of the domestic stuff. The World Board does the international stuff, and so they incorporate our numbers in. So, like for China, what the World Board does, they have a panel of individuals from other agencies, and the Foreign Agricultural Service works with the World Board to come up with the numbers from the other countries. And so, like for in the case of China, basically it's USDA, FAS, Foreign Ag Service employees on the ground looking at things, plus numbers that we get from China, which may right, you're laughing. It's, that's true. It may be skeptical. So, and you know, pulling all that together, you know, basically looking at all that based upon you know our people on the ground and working with the World Board, and just knowing you know how many people they have, how much they're feeding, and that sort of thing gives us an idea. USDA an idea of where, you know, where to peg the numbers.
Joe, this is Dale Dirkholz. I've got a question on a little bit of a different twist, but I'm going to stay with the corn here for a minute. You know, years ago, we used to get the January crop report here on the 9th through the 12th, and then we'd get the stocks report at the end of the month of January, and then they shifted them and put them both coming out on the same day. Mm-hmm. Do you fellows, when you're looking at the production estimates, do you acknowledge what the stocks number for corn is, for example, in trying to decide, you know, what your model tells you about corn production, you know, where to put your estimate? Because I know your model's put out, we think it's within this boundary. And the popular number there is really the midpoint of the boundary that the trade generally uses and the number that you guys put out. But do you use that stocks number to decide where you put that corn production estimate at? Up a little higher above midpoint or down a little bit below midpoint based on what the stocks number tells you?
Right. So we do. You're actually right. When we analyze corn at this time of the year, you know, when we do this end of year, we look at corn. It's both stocks and production at the same time. Now, there's a couple things to remember here. When we do stocks, we have basically two surveys that's going on. We conduct an off-farm survey, which is pretty much a census of any place that would be storing corn. You know, either that's mills, that's elevators, that's even ethanol plants and that sort of thing. And then our survey, we do the on-farm survey. And then you're right, we do look at on-farm stocks with the what we get from the off-farm in relationship to production. And we have to kind of look, does it make sense? You know, and it looks like, and, you know, based upon the things that, you know, what we hear, too, from the outside, you know, farmers are you know, holding stocks. Well, and if you look at the, also in this report, we have a discussion about capacity, and on-farm capacity is increasing, too, this year. So, I mean, it appears that there's a shift in what farmers are doing.
Those grain stocks numbers, by the way, look like this for the January estimates. 9.813 billion for the corn, 2.502 for the soybeans, and wheat at 1.43 billion. Joe, we have to let you go. We appreciate you being with us today.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Joe Persaki is the chief of the crops branch at USDA NAS, joined us from Washington, D.C. A quick final word from our panelist, and we'll start with you, Dale.
Well, the one thing I'd say, you know, I don't think producers can fight what the results or the implications of the USDA numbers are, you know, and you need to use any little rallies to make any sales that you need to get done for the next few weeks.
And Tom Mann.
Well, that mirrors what I was just going to say, you know, be quick to pull a trigger. Don't let this thing slide away from you. One more bump may be all there is.
And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can access this Commodity Week program and analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is WILL.UIUC.EDU. I'm Todd Gleason.